This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast.
It's day 278 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. This week, Palestinians marked another grim milestone as Israel's genocide entered its 10th month with no end in sight. This Monday also marked the 10th anniversary of the start of Israel's 51-day attack on Gaza in 2014, which killed more than 2,200 Palestinians, including more than 550 children. Today, Wednesday, Israel ordered all civilians to leave Gaza City as its forces attacked the headquarters of UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. As it intensified its assault, Israel airdropped leaflets purporting to show safe routes out of Gaza City towards central Gaza. But according to some local reports, many Palestinians in Gaza City were refusing to leave their homes or places of shelter. Responding to the news, Rami Abdu, the head of Euromed Human Rights Monitor, said, "Israel continues its plan to depopulate Gaza City and permanently displace its residents, while the world, including its institutions and people, remain a silent spectator." The Israeli escalation in Gaza City comes after its airstrikes on Tuesday hit people sheltering outside a school in eastern Khan Yunis in the southern Gaza Strip, killing at least 29. Israel claimed to have targeted a Hamas fighter with a precise munition in the deadly strike, but video broadcast by Al Jazeera shows the area filled with civilians enjoying a game of football at the time of the attack. Here's a short clip of that footage. That showed people playing in a schoolyard and then very quickly people running and screaming, "Run away," in Arabic. Meanwhile, in central Gaza, Israeli strikes killed 60 Palestinians and wounded dozens of others. Israeli tanks pushed into an already battered Gaza City on Tuesday, following renewed intense attacks. The Palestine Red Crescent said that it had received dozens of distress calls, but the intensity of the bombing made it impossible for them to help. The military wings of the Palestinian resistance groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad said they were battling Israeli forces with machine guns, mortar fire, and anti-tank missiles, and had killed and wounded Israeli soldiers on Gaza City's front lines. The fresh Israeli attacks in Gaza City caused a new wave of forced displacement, and Hamas said it may derail the protracted ongoing negotiations towards a ceasefire and a prisoner swap. Hamas had in recent days reportedly attenuated its position that Israel end the war as a precondition to any agreement, but it was seeking guarantees that negotiations would lead to a permanent ceasefire. Israel once again indicated that it would reject any deal that would leave Hamas as the de facto governing authority in Gaza. On Sunday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reiterated his position that he would only accept an agreement that would, quote, allow Israel to return and fight until all the goals of the war are achieved. Meanwhile, Israel's Channel 12 News reported on a recent military assessment that much of Hamas's tunnel network is still in a good functional state in many parts of Gaza. The resistance group is still able to launch raids near the boundary with Israel and possibly even to cross it, according to the Times of Israel. The military chiefs reportedly recommended that Israel reach a negotiated deal with Hamas, even if it ends the war, in order to get back Israelis held in Gaza. In his first video appearance in weeks on Sunday, Abu Ubaidah, the spokesperson for the armed wing of Hamas, said that all 24 of the Qassam Brigade's battalions were intact and had recruited thousands of new fighters. With ceasefire talks seemingly at an impasse, there is little sign of relief for Palestinians in Gaza who have endured relentless attacks, trauma and grief, and now increasing hunger and disease. On Saturday, Israel carried out an airstrike targeting a United Nations-run school in central Gaza's Nusayrat refugee camp. At least 16 Palestinians were killed and more than 75 injured in the attack on the school, which the UN said was being used as a shelter for nearly 2,000 displaced people. Israeli military ordered tens of thousands of Palestinians in central and western Gaza City to immediately evacuate on Sunday and Monday. Israel ordered residents of five blocks in Gaza City to evacuate to the western part of the city on Sunday, only for that area to be ordered evacuated the following day, with Israel instructing people to move to Deir el-Balah in central Gaza. The areas affected by the new evacuation orders encompass 13 health facilities, including two hospitals, according to the United Nations. A senior UN official said last week that a recent Israeli evacuation order affecting one-third of Gaza's territory in southern Rafah and Khan Yunis had, quote, wiped out efforts to improve the humanitarian situation. Within Gaza, insecurity, damaged roads, and the breakdown of law and order have also hampered the delivery of fuel and aid needed to sustain humanitarian operations, according to the UN. This has caused food and other supplies to spoil due to summer heat. The lack of fuel has forced bakeries to close once again, including the largest bakery in Gaza City. No commercial trucks have entered northern Gaza for months, according to the United Nations. On Friday, the Euromed Human Rights Monitor accused Israel of using water as a weapon of war through the, quote, persistent, systematic, and widespread targeting of the Gaza Strip's water sources and desalination plants, end quote. With 9 out of 10 people in Gaza currently displaced, most of them forced to move multiple times, people are compelled to reset their lives repeatedly without any of their belongings or any prospect of finding safe or reliable access to basic services, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said. What's happening in Gaza since last night is a return to the first month of genocide, Dr. Mustafa Al-Masri, a psychotherapist in Gaza, wrote on Twitter on Monday. Under relentless bombing, people are forced to wander aimlessly, driven south to be slaughtered there. These are the darkest and most dangerous days of the war, Dr. Al-Masri added. According to a new article in the world-renowned medical journal, The Lancet, fatalities in Gaza could be vastly undercounted in the official death toll, which stands at about 38,000. The new estimate conservatively assesses that up to 186,000 or even more deaths could be attributable to the current conflict in Gaza. These deaths would include tens of thousands of people killed by direct violence, and tens of thousands more who have lost their lives from such causes as reproductive, communicable, and non-communicable diseases resulting from the conflict. The estimate of 186,000 dead represents approximately 8% of Gaza's population of around 2.3 million Palestinians. The recent deaths of more Palestinian children due to hunger and malnutrition leaves no doubt that famine has spread across the entire Gaza Strip, a group of independent UN human rights experts warned on Tuesday. They added that Israel's intentional and targeted starvation campaign against the Palestinian people is a form of genocidal violence and has resulted in famine across all of Gaza. This has been a summary of some of the key developments detailed in an article by our colleague Maureen Claire Murphy, headlined Gaza Facing Most Dangerous Days of the Genocide. You can read the full report at the Electronic Intifada. This week, we published a piece by Fida Al-Qidra about Israel's massive raid on Nusayrat refugee camp on June 8 that killed almost 300 Palestinians. Fidat reports on the testimony of a 16-year-old boy who was told he'd never walk again after being shot by soldiers during the raid. On 8 June, Mu'min was with his grandfather in a family-run supermarket when they heard the sound of explosions. A rapid decision was taken to close down the shop and head for his grandfather's home in the hope that it would be safer there. About 30 minutes later, they realized that the Israelis were nearing his grandfather's house in tanks. His grandfather locked the house and told the 15 or so people inside it to gather in one room. Soon afterwards, Israeli soldiers broke down the door of the house and began firing everywhere. As they approached the room where the family had gathered, Mutmin's grandfather raised his voice. He alerted the troops to the fact that they were civilians in his home. The Israelis entered the room and removed Mutmin's father and grandfather from it. They covered my father's head with a black bag and tied his hands. Then they told him to kneel down and look at the floor, Mutmin said. After they blindfolded my grandfather and told him to lie on the floor. Mutmin's 12-year-old brother Ahmed was ordered to strip. The soldiers bound up his hands and beat him. The soldiers burned Ahmed's neck with a cigarette as he screamed in fear. They started beating my dad and asking him about the resistance and weapons, Mutmin said. My father told them that there are no weapons in the house, that we are civilians and displaced people and do not know anything about the resistance. The soldiers threatened Mutmin's father that if he did not give them a confession, they would kill the children. Mutmin, his brother, Yaman, and their aunt were all shot. According to Mutmin, one of the soldiers laughed after wounding him. He was deliberately trying to scare me, Mutmin said. My mom begged him not to kill me. Once the soldiers left the house, Mutmin's father called an ambulance. None was able to reach the family, so his father put Mutmin on the roof of his car and Yaman inside it, then drove them to hospital. By the time they reached the hospital, Yaman had died. That's from the article by Fida al-Qidra, headlined, "Israelis laughed after shooting me," says survivor of 8 June massacre. It was published on July 8th, and you can read it at the Electronic Intifada. And Iman Abu Qamar wrote about the daily challenges and indignities that are universal among displaced people in Gaza. 8 months have elapsed without electricity. Before the genocide, we were accustomed to 8 hours of power daily. However, since then, Israeli forces have targeted Gaza's only power plant, as well as solar panels across the Gaza Strip. I've regressed to washing clothes by hand, cooking and baking over firewood. There are shortages of gas, fuel, and flour. The washing machines and refrigerators in those houses that have not been reduced to rubble serve as mere decorations, or in some cases, a sanctuary for children during their games of hide and seek. Even basic activities such as charging our phones or connecting to the internet have turned into monumental challenges. We traverse long distances to find working solar panels. Life in makeshift tents and crowded schools lacks even the most basic necessities. Days can pass without access to clean drinking water. We try to avoid unhygienic public bathrooms where queues are interminable. That's from Iman Abu Qamar's article, "The Daily Struggles of Life Under Attack," published at the Electronic Intifada on July 5th. Finally, in a piece published on July 3rd, Osama Abu Jasir describes how some families are trying to make do after being displaced from their homes. With Rafah crossing closed and little to no aid being distributed in Gaza, the Bekir family from Rafah and displaced to Al-Mawasi was unable to find a tent and converted a bus into a shelter. Ahmed Bekir and relatives removed the seats and furnished the bus with the rugs, mattresses, and pillows that they had acquired during their several displacements. They put the blankets in the baggage rack and designated a distinct area in the trunk of the bus for kitchen-related items such as food and water gallons. They placed cloth over the glass of the bus windows to protect the inside from the sun and keep it cool, and to provide family members some privacy. I spend time with my kids inside the bus in the evenings now, just like we would at home, while we listen to the radio on my phone about the latest updates in the war. After that, we go to bed, Bekir said. We feel as if we're in a real home. Other families have pitched improvised tents made out of the parachutes used to drop aid into Gaza. Osama interviewed brothers in Khan Yunis who made a tent out of parachutes with the remnants of exploded missiles as the armature. One of the brothers, named Saeed Rizq, said, "We are glad that we finally have a shelter where we can now sleep, eat, and change our clothes in a somewhat comfortable way." Another man interviewed by Osama named Bassam Hassanin purchased a burlap tent from a tailor and pitched it inside his truck in which his family is living near the beach in Deir al-Balah. Bassam said that getting a shelter became our greatest aspiration during the current war. If we find a tent, we can find no space, and if we find space, we can find no tent. The man who is displaced from Rafah said that we find a solution for any difficulty we face. We don't give up. That's from the piece, Lack of Tents Leads to Shelter Innovations by Osama Abu Jaser, which you can read at The Electronic Intifada.
You've been listening to The Electronic Intifada's newscast. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.